Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. New U.S. military figures released today showed April to be the deadliest month for American soldiers in Iraq since the end of major combat operations a year ago. The strained faces of U.S. forces in the country are matched by strained faces of loved ones watching and waiting on the home front. Tonight on Point, parents of the young men and women doing the hard, dangerous work of soldiering in Iraq. But first, we begin tonight in Crawford, Texas, where President Bush met today with Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. Mubarak's visit comes at a delicate time with turmoil in Iraq, and just 2 days before Bush sits down with Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. The topic on the table, Israel's proposed withdrawal from Gaza. In a joint press conference this afternoon, President Bush called the Israeli proposal a step forward for Mideast peace.
We both are in agreement that if Israel makes the decision to withdraw, it doesn't replace the roadmap. It is a part of the roadmap so that we can continue progress toward the two-state solution.
President Mubarak, however, was more cautious. He warned that a Gaza withdrawal on its own won't be satisfactory for a long-term move to peace.
Withdrawing from Gaza alone without connecting it with the roadmap, we never know it will be Gaza alone. It will be very difficult. It will not be accepted by the public opinion in the area.
But President Bush acknowledged that looming over the meeting today is the continued chaos in Iraq when he said the future of the Middle East and the future of Iraq are closely linked. Janine Zakaria is Washington correspondent for the Jerusalem Post. She joins me now. Good evening and welcome, Janine.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Janine. How do you see the visits of Hosni Mubarak and Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon this week? What's the agenda? What's at work here?
Well, the main focus of all the meetings, the Mubarak meeting today, and I think the meeting that Prime Minister Sharon is going to have with President Bush on Wednesday, is Sharon's plan for a Gaza withdrawal, which everybody's been reading a lot about. The plan is essentially complete now, from what Israeli officials have told me, and it basically calls for an Israeli withdrawal from the Gaza Strip, a complete withdrawal of 7,500 settlers who are living there, while maintaining a small Israeli presence, military presence, along the Gaza-Egypt border until that can be brought under control. And that was one of the issues raised today at the meeting between President Mubarak and President Bush.
Could you tell from what was said publicly today by Egyptian President Mubarak how Egypt is looking on this Israeli proposal?
Well, it would be very hard for both Mubarak and President Bush to in any way condemn an Israeli dismantlement of settlements. Of course, this is something that the United States, the international community, has been calling on Israel to do for years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they offered positive remarks, albeit cautioned them by or conditioned them, rather, by saying the pullback needs to remain a part of the roadmap, which is essentially a euphemism for this cannot thwart a drive towards Palestinian statehood. The roadmap, as everyone will remember, is a plan, a step-by-step plan for Palestinian statehood by next year, the end of next year. And the fear here in Washington, and I think both in Egypt and throughout the Arab world, is that Prime Minister Sharon is dictating events on the ground, saying, picking and choosing which settlements he'll dismantle, and then that could preclude their vision in the Arab world of a Palestinian state on the full West Bank and Gaza Strip.
This is the so-called unilateral Sharon move, where he'll say, we're out of Gaza, but this is what we're doing in the West Bank, and we're not negotiating on that.
That's right. And in fact, before he boarded his plane tonight to come to Washington, he's due to arrive here early tomorrow and meet with National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. He went to Maale Adumim, which is a large settlement outside of Jerusalem, and declared that Maale Adumim will remain in Israel's hands, as well as several other large settlements, what they're referred to in Israel as settlement blocks, which during the Camp David negotiations in 2000 were blocks that Israel had intended to hold on to, but this was an issue that was disputed. And this is something that he's basically trying to say, that we're deciding where we're going to stay, we're acting unilaterally, and the Americans in many respects are sort of playing catch-up, trying to consult with him and figure out what he's doing.
Janine, what exactly do you think Sharon has in mind then in Washington? Does he think he's going to face President Bush putting the arm on him to proceed differently? Is he looking for a blessing here? Is he just delivering the news, this is what we're going to do?
I think that the word blessing is the key word in what you said. The Israelis have been in constant consultations with senior U.S. officials over the last several weeks ahead of this visit to put the final touches not only on the plan, but on a set of sort of political guarantees, as the Israelis are referring to them, that the Americans could offer. They want to see an exchange of letters between the United States and Israel on Wednesday in which the United States would essentially say that in any final peace agreement, the demographics on the ground will be taken into account. This, again, is a way of saying that the U.S. would sort of quasi-bless the idea of Israel holding on to these settlement blocks that I referred to previously. And this is something, of course, the Palestinians object to. And the question really is whether President Bush is going to grant Sharon that. Keep in mind that on April 29th, Prime Minister Sharon is scheduled to put this plan, this withdrawal plan, to his Likud party members, some 200,000 voters, and they're going to vote it up or down, and then there's a series of steps after that. So it really will depend on and how much Bush wants to give Sharon here on Wednesday.
Can President Bush give Ariel Sharon what he wants, these guarantees, and still be in a position to negotiate with both Israelis and Palestinians?
Yeah, I think it's going to be whatever comes out is going to be the kind of statement that both sides can read what they want into it. It's going to be somewhat vague. The Israelis would like to see a straightforward commitment by the United States saying, for example, that Palestinians do not have a right of return to Israel. I don't think he's going to be so blatant as saying that or saying, for example, that the 67 borders, as they're often referred to, are not holy. That's something that the Israelis want also so that they can make these amendments and include these settlement blocks in Israel. It's going to be something a little vague. Some optimistic comments about how this is a step in the right direction, welcoming the Gaza pullback, but again reiterating the importance of the roadmap. It's really hard to say. Putting it in the wider context, I think Sharon is coming at a moment, obviously, when the White House is very distracted by what's going on in Iraq, 70 soldiers killed within the last 12 days, and sort of how that will impact what he needs. It would be very awkward, for example, for President Bush to really give Prime Minister Sharon a very large gift or concession 2 days after he meets Hosni Mubarak of Egypt, a few days before King Abdullah of Jordan is due here. So he's going to try and keep it as balanced as possible, but I think also give Sharon something that he can take back for that Likud referendum later this month.
Janine Zakaria, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure, Tom.
Janine Zakaria is Washington correspondent for the Jerusalem Post. She spoke with me from Washington. It has been a hard patch in Iraq. You can see it in the red-rimmed eyes of U.S. troops staring past TV cameras and news photographers' lenses. Today at his ranch in Crawford, President Bush said the tide was turning.
The situation in Iraq has improved. But you're right, it was a tough week because of there was lawlessness and gangs that were trying to take the law in their own hands.
No one is watching more closely than the American families who have loved ones on the front lines in Iraq. And suddenly the front lines seem to be nearly everywhere. Tonight we're sitting down with parents of soldiers who are fighting for their country, their lives, and an uncertain future in Iraq. This hour on Point, when Johnny and Jane are fighting in Baghdad, in Ramadi, in Fallujah, do you have a son, a daughter, spouse, or sibling serving in Iraq? What do you read in the faces of U.S. soldiers carrying the weight of the U.S. mission in Iraq? What is your question for their parents? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio are Bernice and Jack Whitfler. Their two sons, Eric and Mark, are in the thick of some of the fiercest fighting in Iraq. Eric is 28 and a staff sergeant in the U.S. Marine Corps Reserves. He was deployed on January 1st of this year and is now in Fallujah. Mark is 25 and is a sergeant in the U.S. Marine Corps. He was activated on January 3rd and is in nearby Al Ramadi. Good evening, and thank you very much for being here, Bernice and Jack Whitfler. Thanks to both of you.
Good evening.
It's a pleasure. Thanks
it's wonderful to have you tonight. Also with us tonight from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, and hello, Mr. and Mrs. Whitfler. Very happy. Welcome. Warm welcome to you.
Thank you.
Bernice and Jack, I wish you'd just give us a sense. We can kind of imagine, but every day since your boys have been there has to have been a tough day that you're paying a lot of attention. This last week must have been a particularly challenging week, Jack.
Yeah, it was. We didn't leave the TV too long. Paid quite close attention as to what was going on.
We're waiting to hear from them. It was just terror. And they're not being familiar with, they've only been there a short time.
Yeah.
And
it, yeah.
When the news came through about so many violent deaths, I was worried that someone was going to come to the door, not receive a phone call. And we were fortunate enough to have phone calls from both our sons.
Oh, that's great.
We've spoken to them several times.
Just in the last week?
As a matter of fact, before coming in here tonight, I was relieved to get permission to speak with you.
Oh,
I wanted
them.
To speak my heart, but yeah. I didn't want to embarrass them
of
in
course.
Any way.
Of course.
So it's a relief to know that other than a bad haircut, I don't think I have embarrassed them that much.
So you heard from them. Let's see. Mark is in Ramadi.
Yes, that's right. Mark is with an MP unit.
Military police unit.
Yes.
In Ramadi. Of course, Ramadi had that very bad hit about a week ago where...
Both sergeants were involved in at the same time, although in different skirmishes. One lasted 13 hours, another about 2 hours.
These are firefights that your boys were in?
Absolutely. Yes.
The long one was in Ramadi or Fallujah?
Fallujah.
In Fallujah.
Yes.
And Eric is also doing MP work now?
Yes, he's doing convoy escort.
Convoy escort. So they've got a lot of equipment to move in there for the Marines in this big operation.
Not only that, but it's for food for the Iraqis and all the different supplies that have to come in. The vehicle that was blown up in front of Eric happened to have been a mail truck for some of our boys.
In the convoy that
he was
driving in.
Yes. Right.
The vehicle
yes.
ahead of him.
Mm-hmm. Right. Was rocketed, and his flak jacket was ripped with shrapnel.
Oh, my gosh. Your son's flak jacket from the mail truck, of all things, in front of him.
He's sitting on top of a 7-ton truck behind it. Behind a 50 caliber machine gun.
Jack, what do you hear in the boys' voices? I mean, they have been deployed, and then here we are within a matter of just a couple of months in the thick of it. How are they doing?
They're doing really well. We spoke to them probably about 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours after the skirmishes.
Yeah.
And he said his legs were still shaking and his heart was still racing. But they survived it very well. He said he kept his feet under his 50 cal and just kept on firing.
Bernice, what do you hear with your mother's ear in their voices from these tough scenes?
We had no image of anything until after speaking with them. Mm-hmm. I could sense the sadness and the despair. I could sense the fear. And he didn't want us to be afraid. And as we were explaining to him that we were well aware of what was being broadcast, and he just seemed to open up more. And as he talked and as we were listening, we could tell that the weight was coming off of him. And he explained more. The sense that I have is that he is doing the right thing. He feels he's doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. It is not a waste of time or a waste of life. I could never accept that. He feels he's doing the right thing, and we want him home, and he wants to come home.
I'm sure, Jack, you can just imagine it's all there. The courage that Jack is describing, the fear, every soldier knows it, that Bernice is describing. If anybody who's honest about it knows that's there as well. And now, in an age where parents get filled in on the telephone on a firefight that took place only hours before.
Well, one's heart goes out to them and one's respect for their sons, too. You know, here they are. The never-ending party of American consumerism goes on all around these folks where they have to wake up every morning to this harrowing, unimaginable fear. And, you know, not one in, 10,000 of their neighbors has to share their anxious waiting. With a volunteer army, it's so easy for the rest of us to just distance ourselves from what injustice should really be a common ordeal. I mean, only one member of Congress, to my knowledge, has a son in the services. I don't think any of the talking heads on television does. Tom Friedman, the New York Times columnist, wrote recently about sending his daughter to Princeton. Well, she's not in Iraq. We're not connected with this. Yes.
Yeah.
It's they're having to bear this alone, and it's not fair.
Well, we are talking tonight with parents of U.S. troops in Iraq, people whose own kids are carrying the U.S. mission. With me in the studio, Bernice and Jack Whipler. They're two sons, Eric and Mark. 25 and 28 are both in the Sunni Triangle. You can join the conversation tonight. Is your son or daughter, sibling or spouse in Iraq? Can you imagine having two sons in the Marines in Iraq tonight? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with parents of U.S. troops in Iraq, people whose own children are carrying the U.S. mission there. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Bernice and Jack Whipfler. Their sons, Mark and Eric, are in the U.S. Marines, one in Fallujah, one in nearby Ramadi tonight, both in the Sunni Triangle. And you heard just now from Jack and Bernice just how close they have come to the fighting, a truck's length away. You can join the conversation tonight. Can you imagine having two sons in the Marines in Iraq tonight? How is the burden of carrying out U.S. policy in Iraq being shared? What's your question for parents of two young Marines in Iraq, in Ramadi and Fallujah? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jack, you were just mentioning in the break this story that is on the wires today of the family in Wisconsin with three daughters in the National Guard, one of whom has just died in Iraq, been killed, and the father appealing to the military to not make the other two go. Oh, my gosh, you've got two. They
may. Right. You know, when you think you have it bad, there's certainly someone else that has it a little bit worse.
Yeah.
Fortunately, in our case, our community has been reaching out very deeply to us. The VFW and the American Legion have both given the boys free membership in their organizations.
Yeah.
They're sending them packages. The Girl Scouts are also sending packages. We're getting a tremendous amount of support. And a lot of people do feel our need and our want and our sadness.
So you're not feeling fully alone in this?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. Our community is a great little community, and my son's friends have all answered to us.
That's mm-hmm. terrific. Bernice, you've got Eric, who's in the reserves.
Yes.
And as I understand it, his brother Mark decided to go also when Eric was called up to go to Iraq. What was the story there?
Well, actually, in the beginning, Mark graduated from high school and joined the Marines right away.
Yeah.
He did 4 years. And with Marines, you have 4 years active, 2 years inactive.
Mm-hmm.
As his second year wound up and he was completely free,
mm-hmm.
his brother's reserve unit was called out of Hanscom to report to Iraq.
Now, Eric had been in college.
He's in the reserves. Yes, he's with Mass Maritime Academy, a senior.
Okay.
He was
so
very
grateful.
So in
his final year at the Maritime Academy,
yes.
The call came from the reserves.
That's right. So they've interrupted his graduation this year to go.
And at that point, Mark said what?
This was just before Christmas, about 2 days before Christmas. I said, Mark, did you know that Eric is leaving? He said, yes. And I could just tell by the big brown eyes looking at me that he had more to tell me. And I had a sense that he had joined up again, which is what he did. He had put a lot of thought into this because he'd been trying for many years to get on the Boston Fire Department.
Right.
And he was on that waiting list.
Sure.
And just waiting. He was
yeah.
up there and going for school as a paramedic. And he knew he was putting that on hold because he wanted to go with his brother. So he is not. They both left the week after Christmas, but they haven't seen each other at all until just last week.
Oh, my gosh. So, Jack, this was Mark's decision that he would re-up so that he would have the chance to be in Iraq near his brother? Or did he know he would be in Iraq if he re-upped?
Yes, he was. That's where he was. The unit he joined up with
yes.
was out of Minnesota, and that's where they were destined to go.
So he didn't know if he'd be near Eric or far, but he wanted to be in the same country as his brother.
He volunteered to go to Iraq.
Oh, my gosh.
And Iraq was where he wanted to go.
How many years is he re-upped for, then? What does it mean?
He's re-upped for 1 year.
Just a
he's
one-year
got a
extension.
One-year contract with him, one-year extension.
Right.
And it was his determination to go to Iraq.
How did you feel as a father when he announced
devastated.
This decision?
I was absolutely devastated. Here's my little boy that said that, Dad, the one thing I'm going to do is I'm always going to live near you, and I'm always going to take care of you.
Yeah.
He told me that as a youngster. And,
yeah.
he decided he's going back in. It just devastated
but
me.
He's he did it to be near his brother.
Yeah, yes. He did it to be near his brother, and he did it as his sense of duty as a Marine. It was his sense of duty. He had spent 4 years training, and this was his opportunity to use his training. And
wow, that's
I think
commitment.
Mark was born to be a hero anyway. I think it's his destiny.
That is really commitment. Bernice, what have the boys? I shouldn't call them boys, but maybe you
and
do.
And I do the same.
Yeah, we call them.
I mean, you know what I mean.
All.
I understand
so
them all
the
way,
that.
But they're your sons.
Yes.
How did they describe what went on? They lost the truck in front of them in the convoy in the firefight, the long firefight.
You know, as close as Eric was to the action,
yeah.
And he lost 9 out of his 30 trucks in that convoy that were exploded. Mark's convoy.
Yeah.
Lost 6 out of the 9 that he was in.
6 of 9 trucks
right.
getting
and,
into Fallujah.
Right.
I mean,
and,
we're reading today that access is an issue, just getting resupplied
absolutely.
To the Marines because
yes.
there's trouble all along that highway.
Mark's Humvee was riddled with bullets.
The Humvee he was in.
The one he was in, along with his captain who was wounded. Mark pulled his captain out of the vehicle, dressed his wounds, and made sure he was air-evac'd out of there. His had to turn in his flak jacket because it was covered with blood, his captain's blood.
Wow. This is as close as you want to be, as you don't
so
want to
be. So both
of
them saw quite a bit of action last week.
Mark has been reticent about speaking, and he thought in many ways that Eric should not share some of the worry or the concern. However, we could almost feel, it was palpable, that he was feeling better by talking with us.
Oh, sure.
And I actually felt better knowing it. I don't want anyone hiding anything.
Don't
from
leave
me.
A mystery around
no.
it. Don't try to buck us up from over there.
And the pride I have in them, when Jack says hero, we know that he saved his captain's life. We know he was there for a purpose. And he knows it. So it removed all my questions about my uncertainty, about the politics of war, anything. I'm not over there. My heart is there. But they are there, and it's not a waste of time. It has to make a difference. And it's made the difference in at least one man's life.
In saving his captain.
Yes.
Jack, what about the overall mission? The last week has set a lot of people back on their heels saying, oh, my gosh, we thought we were getting this thing kind of on the rails, and we were headed toward a handover, and now how long, how many troops? No one knows. And yet, you know, the president continues to say, we have to do this for freedom. We have to bring democracy to Iraq. How are you looking at it? How do you understand to yourself exactly what it is that your sons are fighting for, that they are risking their lives for?
It's awful hard to say that. The boys, you know, and I'm only reflecting from the boys' point of view.
Yeah.
The boys feel that they have enough troops. That's their feeling. The manner in which they're going about it now, they feel more comfortable with than them replacing the Army, that the Army was defensive. They feel as though they're more aggressive and more offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree with them. I think that at this point in time, it still has to be aggressive.
But in your view, what exactly are they fighting for? And I don't mean to put you on the spot with that at all.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. When you ask yourself that question, what is it exactly?
Hard to define, really. They're fighting for their country, for their patriotism.
For democracy in Iraq, in your view?
Yes.
Do you think that's for real?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. I do. You know, we come from a little town in Plymouth, Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
and
Plymouth
that's
Rock.
where our country pretty much started. The pilgrims come here for religious freedom, and we managed to seem to have gotten it.
Do you think that American troops can deliver that to Iraqis?
We're going to do our very best, and I think I think we can. At least we're going to attempt to give it to them, and whether they can do anything with it afterwards, that's up to them.
Bernice, I see you're holding a letter on Marine Corps stationery. It looks like it's from one of your sons.
Yes.
Is there a bit of it you'd like to read to us?
Absolutely.
Who's it from?
This is from Eric, who, after 9/11, knew he had the decision that he wanted to defend his country against terrorism. And in the letter, a portion of it says that he has no political insight, but he will fight because he is told to do so. He says, I will fight because what I believe is that it's important to finish what we have started. The United States, our home, for better or for worse, is under attack. The enemy isn't going to quit if we decide it's not beneficial to be there. Afghanistan and Iraq are the places that protect, house, and fund those who wage intifada. I have not lost sight of that fact, and I leave with an open and honest heart. That gives me the strength to pick up, pack up, and ship out. I feel a deep sense of honor to be a Marine, and I will always do as a Marine does. I am no robot, at least not when it comes to being a man. I'm aware of the dangers, and I have the heartache of leaving. If I would, I would graduate and start my career and cherish every moment with the people I love. Some of those things I have accomplished because of the Marine Corps. He does go on further, but
yeah.
I think that...
You get the sense of it right there. A young man ready to do his duty as he sees it. Bernice and Jack Whipler have two sons in the Marines in Iraq tonight and in a hard part of Iraq. One in Eric in Fallujah, Mark in Al-Ramadi. We're joined now from Pennington, New Jersey by Mildred Mortillo. Her son Steve is 21 years old. He's a private in the U.S. Army. Good evening and welcome. Mildred.
Hello.
Thanks very much for being with us. Where is your son stationed tonight, Mildred?
He's stationed in the Sunni Triangle between Balad and Samarra.
And what is it like there? Has it been an area of fighting this last week or not?
I haven't had very much contact. I know that a team of five in a vehicle, one man died and four were injured in Samarra today.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there have been deaths and fighting going on there.
When was Steve deployed to Iraq?
He was deployed, he went to Kuwait in February, mm-hmm. and then he went to Iraq in March.
And what have you heard from him so far?
I had one brief email saying that he was telling us where he was and just saying thank you for the packages and, you know, all my friends, thank you for the packages and everything you've sent as well because we share everything. And that's basically the only contact that we've had.
What kind of things do you send in the packages, Mildred?
I send them all kinds of snacks and food. I send them Gatorade. I send them batteries, books, magazines.
The little things to make life a little more comfortable there.
Yes, yes.
Mildred, I know that you are a member of an organization called Military Families Speak Out.
Yes.
I think that most or all of the members of this organization are critical of the Iraq war effort. Is that right?
Yes. Again, people may have different opinions on various issues. But yes, they have generally have problems with the conduct of the war and the reasons for going to war.
So how do you reconcile your support for your son and his colleagues in the military there and your feelings about the war overall, Mildred Mortillo?
Well, my position is that I support the troops 100%. I think that we have the best army, and that includes the Navy and the Marines. I think they're all wonderful. I support them all 100%. Where I have a problem is with their commander-in-chief. Basically, he said there were weapons of mass destruction, and there are none. He said that there were chemical and nuclear weapons and conjured up visions of mushroom clouds over Iraq. And we found out that that's not true. And there were no ties to Al-Qaeda. So I have a problem with, we have over 600 dead now, and I have a problem with that.
What? Do you share those thoughts with your son, Steve, who's in Iraq? And if you do, how does he respond?
I haven't had a chance to speak to him since he's been in Iraq. I don't know how he'd respond.
Talking tonight with Mildred Mortillo and Bernice and Jack Whipler, all parents of sons in their cases, in Iraq tonight, some very close to the fierce fighting of this last week. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Dan is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to give my best to all the families. I just want to say I have a son at UMass and a daughter who will be going off to college in a couple of years. And that one of the saddest things for me is that whether people agree with this war or not, we as a country have taken advantage of idealistic and patriotic people, many of whom were not well off or highly educated, and asked them to accept that in order to defend our country, which they feel so strongly about, to defend our country against terrorism, that they had to go to fight a war in Iraq. And at the same time, President Bush and Vice President Cheney, who have tapped into that wonderful strain of American idealism, are not asking for sacrifices from anyone else. Besides the fact of whatever their idealism and patriotism was in their youth and their decision not to volunteer to fight in a war that others had determined needed to be fought, why are they not asking for sacrifices from anyone else?
What kind of sacrifice would you like the president and vice president to ask for, Dan?
Well, I think that it's very interesting because President Bush's response is to tell us to go shop.
Well, that was his response to the terrorist attacks of 9/11. Not exactly to the war in Iraq.
What should be sacrifices that others should make? What is he asking of people like his own daughters? How is he asking them? What kind of sacrifices should he be asking of them? Well, we're asking people to be idealistic and patriotic to go off to Iraq, which for very questionable reasons. What sacrifices should he be asking of of others in that generation and of people who are benefiting financially here, who are doing well, while others are fighting a war?
Dan, it sounds like a reasonable question. Let us pick it up. Mildred Murtillo, I'll put it first to you. If the war is going to go on, are there sacrifices that other Americans, who, unlike your son and Bernice and Jack's sons, are not at the front?
Absolutely. I recently was at a protest, and I had an Army captain who happened to be walking down the street with his wife, and they both came up to me and said, "Can we give you a hug?" And they said, "Thank you for what you're doing." He trains reserves off to Iraq, and he said he's leaving the Army after 23 years because he can't. It's happening to these families. The reservists are losing their jobs, and
because they're away so long in Iraq.
Their homes and you know, people aren't... I mean, after 9/11, we had an outpouring for the families of those who were lost, but reservists are losing their homes and sometimes their marriages because of the financial strain on them, and nothing's being done.
Well,
I think that was very well put, what the caller expressed.
One simple thing would be to give full support to those troops and reservists' families while they're away, and to those troops and reservists when they do come home.
Absolutely, and I know that my son purchased several things that really should be provided by the country when they go over there, things such as safety glasses and supplies.
You would think they'd go with those. We have to take a short break. We're talking tonight with parents of U.S. troops in Iraq. Mildred Murtillo, Bernice, and Jack Whipfler, you can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with parents of U.S. troops currently deployed in Iraq, people whose own kids, own children, are carrying the U.S. mission. You can join the conversation. What do you read in the faces of American soldiers in the fighting? When will the U.S. mission be accomplished? And how big a miracle are we asking these young American men and women to produce? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Bernice and Jack Whipfler. Their two sons, Eric and Mark, are in the Marines in the Sunni Triangle in Fallujah and Al Ramadi. Mildred Murtillo is with us from Pennington, New Jersey. Her son, Steve, is also in the Sunni Triangle tonight, 21 years old and in the Army. Jack, we had a caller just before the break, and I wanted to put his kind of query to you. He said several things, but among them, should there be sacrifices by other Americans back on the home front while young men like your sons are out there risking a lot? Is there more that should be done? What do you think of his characterization?
I can only answer for my own family.
Mm-hmm.
And my own family feels that we're there and we'll do our part. If he doesn't want us to do our part for him, then my sons are over there doing it for me. Mm-hmm. And sure, we'll welcome anybody. The Marines will welcome anybody, and they'll make a man out of them. Or we'll make a man out of your daughter, too. Mm.
or a fighting force, anyway. Yeah. Bernice, let me put the same thing to you. There was the suggestion in our caller's question that young men like yours, that families like yours are being taken advantage of in some degree.
You
heard that.
I resent that. I was offended. Yes, maybe I made the mistake of saying they're my boys, they're my sons, they're my children, but they're adults, and I respect these men. They are not being taken advantage of when they stand up for what they believe in. And over these last few weeks, I've had a lifetime of this. I've had a lifetime of Vietnam and politics and peace marches, and I've had it. I know simple words such as freedom, duty, and honor are the most powerful words. And my sons possess those characteristics, those traits. And I'm offended to think that someone would think they could be taken advantage of, because they're not. They're doing what they think is right. And they're there. And that support for the troops doesn't mean to say that you can undermine. To think that President Bush sent them there for punishment for some reason, because we aren't rich, because they're not at Dartmouth.
I hear you loud and clear, Jack Beatty. There is a drama that plays out whenever some people's children are at war and others are not. The people whose children are there are going to—they're going to support those boys, and they're going to feel that kind of pride you can hear in Bernice and Jack. Even Mildred Mortillo, who has questions about the war, is very much supporting her son. She's sending him what he needs, Jack.
Yes. I mean, my son believes in duty, honor, and country as well. And when I speak out, I speak not for him but myself as an American citizen, in what I see as some untruths that we're told in order to start a war. So, and that's my patriotic duty as an American, I feel. And I adore my son, and he believes in duty, honor, and country, and I'm very proud of him, very.
Jack, there are challenges and respect at the same time flowing between these perspectives. But everybody's got a big stake in what's going on right now.
Yes, but I think we hear something in common. You know, President Reagan in 1984 spoke at the 40th anniversary of the D-Day landings. He spoke on Point du Hoc, which was a high point that the Army Rangers scaled and had terrible fighting there. And he looked at these now middle-aged men, and he said, where do we get such men? And I think listening to these families, we know where we get them. And it's so easy to say, but so true. This is what makes the country worth fighting for, that families like this can raise young men who are willing to take this kind of risk for all of us. I mean, this justifies what we're doing here, it seems to me.
Well, there's a lot of backbone there. You want to see it well deployed and well used. I want to turn now to Hanover Park, Illinois. Sue Giardino is joining us. Her son, Joe, is a Lance Corporal in the Marines. This is his second deployment in Iraq. He left on Valentine's Day. He also is in the Sunni Triangle. He turns 22 this month. Good evening and welcome, Sue Giardino.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. Can you tell us where Joe is and where you last heard from him?
Yes, I heard from him. It was probably about 5 o'clock in the morning last Saturday, a week ago Saturday, which is not untypical. Okay. He generally does call between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m.
Oh, great.
So when the phone rings during that time, I'm usually expecting that it's him.
Right.
I don't know exactly where he is. I know that he's somewhere in the Al Anbar province.
This is where we've seen the trouble in the last
week. Yes. And so I know that he's out in that area, but exactly where he is, I don't know. We did receive an email in the middle of last week from him. And all that he put in the email was, I know that you've heard a lot of things on the news. I just want to let you know the past 4 days have been hell. I have a couple of hours off. I just wanted to write to let you know that I'm okay. I love you all, and I miss you, and looking forward to seeing you again. And that was about the last message we've heard from him.
A few words of mercy for his mother, not entirely relieving, but yet he's alive and he's He's sending you that signal.
Absolutely. So I just go back to that email whenever I need to, and I just stare at it.
So this is his second deployment in Iraq?
Is.
So he was in the invasion force, I guess, and now he's back?
Correct.
What did he feel about being sent back?
You know, interestingly enough, and I've been listening in on the conversation, and I agree wholeheartedly with the family that is there in your studio that has
Bernice
the
and Jack.
There,
Whoops.
Bernice and Jack. Because he came home in September. He was only home for probably about 6 weeks when he was told he was going back again in February.
It's a quick turnaround.
So, yes. So we knew for a couple of months that he would be going back. But I must tell you that he believes in what he's doing, and he went into this with eyes wide open. He joined the military. He joined the Marines wanting to be a Marine and wanting to do this. So he returned, and he knew that he was going back. And so I support him, and I know that he supports the effort in what he's doing. He does not speak against the military, nor do I think that he ever would. And I know that he is in full support of the brotherhood of military men and women that are out there with him.
So let me ask you about how Joe sees where this is headed. Is he confident they're going to achieve what they've been tasked to achieve, that they can establish a democracy in Iraq that will stand up and last?
I have not had that conversation with him. The few times that I've talked to him in the 2 months that he's been gone, we've only had usually about a 4 to 6 minute phone conversation.
Yeah.
So I've never even got into that depth of a conversation with him. I don't know if he thinks they'll achieve it.
What's your sense on that?
My sense is that I think that the United States is laying a foundation that the Iraqis will be able to build upon at a later date. Whether they will successfully build upon it, I don't know. But I think that the foundation is being laid, and then the rest is up to them.
It's a pretty big if, but in that perspective, a noble effort. Let me take another call. A lot of people want to join the conversation with all of you, Mildred, Sue, Bernice, and Jack. Jude is calling from Boston. Hi, Jude. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind, Jude?
Well, I want to say that my son is in Iraq. He's been there since March. He was in Kuwait first, and he's there. His politics and my politics about it are probably very different. However, he has an intense desire to support the brotherhood of men and women who are there. He's in the National Guard, and he wanted to go to be with his brothers and sisters there to support them, and he thought his being there could help them.
And now that he's there, what have you heard, Jude?
Well, I hear through email a little bit. I haven't heard anything from this last week. I'm very concerned about that. However, I know where he is, and he's in at an airfield called El Taji, which is a little bit northwest of Baghdad, and he's with the Army. And I don't know exactly, of course, what they're doing, but my guess is they're doing security.
Yeah. And are you supportive of his work there?
I'm supportive of him, and I'm supportive of what he believes in. I don't know that he believes anything about the politics of being there. I think it's more on a day-to-day basis of getting through what it takes to keep people safe, the people that are over there safe from America.
Got it. Jude, thank you very much for your call. Jack Whipler, last week there were moments when it looked like what the United States might be up against was some kind of uprising, even potentially a popular uprising, to the point that these thousands of Iraqi police and soldiers that the U.S. Contractors have trained walked away from their police station. Some of them actually turned and joined with the al-Mahdi army. This is Muqtada al-Sadr's army, joining them in their effort to take things over. That can't be a very good feeling. If we get an uprising going on, we don't know how this is going to go. There's a lull in everything right now. It seems to be still be teetering. Paul Bremer said over the weekend there's a crisis there. They've got to purge some of the poison. But surely you would not like to see your sons facing something like a popular uprising. I mean, they must feel they've come to help these people, not to fight with them generally.
Yeah, exactly. There was sort of some mixed emotions when all of a sudden your friends turn on you. It's difficult, but, you know, they're just going to go and do what they have to do. And I don't know how to answer that.
So you should just give up? You know, because it didn't work, you just, oh, well, it didn't work.
Right.
Let's give up. Let's go home. Forget it.
So you're solid. Stay there. Do the job. Mildred Mortillo, I hear you making a critique of the war that's different, saying supporting the troops but questioning the strategy.
Yes. My son has the same kind of feeling of brotherhood with his army, with the people that he serves. And I think it's a wonderful. I think that's a wonderful part of the army, and that they go and they serve together, and they're following orders, and that's exactly what an army is trained to do. However, I have a problem with the orders that were given, and that's why I speak out, because I feel that what President Bush and the administration did was wrong.
So, Giordino, let me put to you this question. We just have a short time left, but of how the burden of fighting this war is being shared by Americans. Do you think it's being fairly shared? We've got a volunteer army. Everybody who's there put their hand up for it one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think it's being shared fairly across geography and you know, income lines and all the rest?
Well, I don't know about that. My own personal feeling on it is, yes, to your point, Tom, we have a volunteer military. So
yep.
The people that are there have all volunteered and chosen to be in the military. A part of what comes with that is this unpleasant piece right now, and that is that there is a war that's happening that they're mm-hmm. fighting in. Now, in my own little world right here, I have huge support, and so I don't feel that I'm alone. My coworkers and my neighbors and my family are all very supportive of what my son is doing. And so from my perspective, my son is doing what he wants to do, and that gets me through because I know he's doing what he wants to do. And every time I talk to him, the few times that I have talked to him while he's been there, I do not detect anything in his voice that leads me to believe that he's sorry he has ever done this.
Well, I've got to say, in almost all of our contacts with the military there is a very steady sense of high morale. It's impressive. I don't know. I hope that we don't test it to any kind of point where it erodes. I look out over this last week and worry if we have many more weeks or months or more like that it might be tested. Our time is way too short. There's a lot more we'd like to hear from all of you. But we're out of it, and I'm very grateful to all of you. Sue Giordino in Hanover Park, Mildred Mortillo in Pennington, New Jersey. Thanks to both of you for being with us tonight, and good luck to your sons, Steve and Joe.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Bernice and Jack Wipfler, whose sons Eric and Mark are in the SUNY Triangle tonight, in the studio with me tonight. Thank you very much for being with us, for sharing your thoughts with us. It's great to have both of
you.
Thank you,
Tom.
Thank you.
Our very best and deep wishes, good wishes, to Eric and Mark. Jack Beatty, your fellow American, speaking.
I second what you say, Tom. Our very best wishes to them and to their speedy homecoming and happy homecoming.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.